The Story of the Santa Rita, Number 1. On the first day of March, 1836, a convention assembled in Texas at Washington on the Brazos, was promptly organized and elected Richard Ellis as its president. On the following day, the unanimous Declaration of Independence by the delegates of the people of Texas in General Convention was adopted. One of the significant indictments brought against Mexico, of which Texas was then a part, was the following. It has failed to establish any public system of education, although possessed of almost boundless resources, the public domain. And although it is an axiom in political science that unless a people are educated and enlightened, it is idle to expect the continuance of civil liberty or the capacity for self-government. On April 21st of the same year, the Battle of San Jacinto was fought and won by Texians. The important declaration in which the following statement appeared, now had its implementation. We, therefore, the delegates with plenary powers of the people of Texas, in solemn convention assembled, appealing to a candid world for the necessities of our condition, do hereby resolve and declare that our political connection with the Mexican nation has forever ended, and that the people of Texas do now constitute a free, sovereign, and independent republic, are fully invested with all of the rights and attributes which properly belong to independent nations, and conscious of the rectitude of our intentions, we fearlessly and confidently commit the issue to the decision of the Supreme Arbiter of the destinies of nations. Texas became a republic through the determined and heroic efforts of its people. Once the republic had been established, the question of creating a university of the first class received the very earnest consideration of Texians who loved liberty and freedom and who were dedicated to the proposition that the abundant life of those who were to follow depended upon the ability of the pioneers to provide for the educational development of their young. It was in this spirit that the Constitution of the Republic of Texas set apart for the endowment, maintenance, and support of said university and its branches 1,000,000 acres of land. Provision for the organization and maintenance of the university was again made in the Constitution of 1876. This Constitution took away lands granted to the university under an act of 1858 and gave in lieu thereof 1,000,000 acres farther west. To the lands previously set apart and appropriated for the endowment, the legislature in 1883 added 1,000,000 acres of land. The nucleus from which the university was to grow was therefore unique in form and without parallel in size. By a popular election held in 1881, the main university was located at Austin. The university was actually established in 1883 when the academic and law branches were organized. Thus, one of the most cherished ambitions of Texians began to find its fulfillment. The words of Mirabeau B. Lamar were to spur on those who were in a position to develop a mighty institution. For it was he who said, "Cultivated mind is the guardian genius of democracy, and while guided and controlled by virtue, the noblest attribute of man. It is the only dictator that free men acknowledge, and the only security which free men desire." In 1906, the American people were still going west in search of land and opportunity that goes with free ownership. In that year, a father and son left North Central Texas to search in West Texas for land on which to establish a ranch. The journey had its end in Reagan County, where the ranch was established. The boy, Rupert T. Ricker, grew up on the ranch and later attended the University of Texas. He received his law degree in 1915. After serving as a captain in World War I, Rupert Ricker returned to the family ranch to find that the ranching business was in a very critical condition due to a severe drought. Eager to build his fortunes, he turned to oil as the latest oil field in Texas at Ranger had broken wide open. It was natural that he should hope that oil might be found on his family's property. Yet he knew that since the university was the largest landowner in Reagan County, that it would be the part of wisdom to block up a large acreage of university land for development and speculation. On June 21, 1916, Dr. Johann A. Udden, professor of geology at the university, had submitted to the Board of Regents a photograph of a map, together with a report on the probable or potential mineral resources of the university lands. In his report, Dr. Udden stated, "It does not appear unreasonable to regard it as suggesting the possibility of the existence of buried structures in which oil may have accumulated. Drilling should not be undertaken, however, before a thorough geological examination has been made, whereby the exceedingly small chance of making the right location for a test may be materially increased." Rupert Ricker determined to promote the drilling of a wildcat well in Reagan County. He blocked up 674 sections, totaling 431,360 acres, all of the university's land in Reagan, Irion, Upton, and Crockett counties. He hoped to sell permits to drill on this property in sufficient number to enable him to drill a well. He and his associates were, however, unable to raise the $43,136 rental, which needed to be paid to the state. When but a few days of grace remained, Ricker sold the fruit of his labor in Fort Worth, Texas, to Frank T. Pickrell and Haman Krupp of El Paso for $500. These men paid the rental fee and turned to New York in an effort to raise the funds with which to drill a well. Having failed to sell drilling permits in New York, Pickrell and Krupp concluded to do their own developing. In April of 1919, the Texan Oil and Land Company was organized for this purpose. The company was capitalized at 2 million shares of $1 par value. An agreement was executed with New York brokers authorizing the Texan Oil and Land Company to geologize and select 200,000 acres in payment for the total capital stock. The 200,000 acres were geologized and selected for the Texan Company by Hugh H. Tucker. New York brokers found it difficult to sell oil stock in a Texas wildcat well to be drilled by a company which had no oil production. To overcome this deficiency, Pickrell and Krupp bought three producing oil wells in Burke Burnett. In the ultimate, some 685 certificates of interest were sold in New York at a price of $200 each. Frank Pickrell, realizing that the time for instituting actual drilling operations was growing short, arrived in San Angelo, Texas about January the 6th, 1921. He concluded to move in a manner which would contribute to the solution of two problems: the drilling of a legitimate hole by the deadline established by law, and the securing of a supply of water required for the actual oil well drilling operations. He acquired a rattle trap water well drilling outfit in San Angelo and moved it to the drilling site over the Orient Railroad. He hired Walter Brown, a water well driller, and W.C. Latham, an old Spanish Trail teamster, to assist on the job. The train reached Best, Texas at 7 o'clock on the last day of grace, January 8th. If no legitimate hole was drilled by midnight, the permit acquired from the state would expire. Pickerel and his associates won the race against time by beginning the hole just before midnight. The work on the water well continued for 3 months. The original water well dried up, and W.P. Holt was employed to extend the original shallow well down to a depth of 425 feet. In June of that year, Pickerel employed R.S. MacDonald to build the real derrick with which the oil well was to be drilled. The material was shipped in from Ranger for this 84-foot structure. Carl G. Cromwell was then employed as the driller of the Santa Rita. The name of the well had its origin in New York. In financing the well, Frank Pickerel had approached a Catholic group for the purpose of encouraging them to invest their money in his Texas project, realizing that a speculative interest of this character involved a very serious risk. Some members of the group consulted their priest. It was he who advised these prospective investors to invoke the aid of Santa Rita, Saint of the Impossible. Upon returning to Texas, Frank Pickerel christened the well Santa Rita, sprinkling the petals of a red rose over the derrick and rig structure from the crown block. Time dragged on, and the drilling operations continued at a slow pace throughout 1921 and 1922. Ranching people in the area felt sorry for Carl Cromwell, his helpers, and his family. Mrs. Cromwell has said, "The ranchers were touched in their bluff way by the pathos of two men, a woman and a little girl, set in the desert country beside a rusty railroad, pecking a hole in the rocks in search of oil." On Sunday afternoon, May 27, 1923, Carl Cromwell and his tool dresser, D. Lachlan, cleaned out the hole with a baler. They had by then drilled to a depth of 3,055 feet. The material brought to the surface in the baler showed that they had a little showing of oil. When the baler was lowered to the bottom of the well again and brought to the surface, it was found to be filled with oil. They concluded to tell no one, built a trap door to close the hole, boarded up the bottom of the derrick. On Monday morning, May 28, 1923, Mrs. Cromwell heard a hissing noise as she was preparing breakfast for her husband and little daughter, Carlene. The noise sounded like a rattlesnake at the doorstep of the driller's shack. As they reached the door, the members of the family saw a thin column of gas and oil vapor rising above the top of the derrick. Cromwell, in great astonishment, said, "Well, I'll be damned." Frank Pickerel, then in Arkansas, was summoned to Texon, and upon reaching the site of the well, found that he had a flowing well in the center of 64 square miles of leases. The Santa Rita number 1 flowed 3 times on the day that it blew in, 2 times on May 29th, and once regularly each day thereafter for 35 to 40 days. There was no place to store the oil until earthen reservoirs could be prepared. When these were filled, the well flowed out on the ground for several weeks. Initially, it flowed approximately 100 barrels a day. When pumping operations were begun later, it produced 200 barrels a day. Although it was not a large producing well, it was the fulfillment of a prophecy of great things to come. The developments which followed involved a productivity which stretches the imagination. A forest of derricks sprang up from the soil, which until then was believed by many oil people to be barren and completely devoid of oil.
the oil and gas produced on the university's land in West Texas have been such as to cause a very large sum to accrue in the institution's permanent fund.
The rig which stands here remained at the site of the well for some 19 years. Throughout that period of time, the Santa Rita No. 1 continued to be pumped. Reflecting upon the tremendous significance of this well upon the growth of the University of Texas and the welfare of the people of Texas, Dr. Walter Prescott Webb recommended in 1939 that the rig be removed from its site and erected on the university campus. Upon conferring with Mr. Charles E. Beyer, Vice President and General Manager of the Big Lake Oil Company, he found the latter to share the view that it would be the part of wisdom to transport the rig to Austin and erect it on the campus in order that it might stand as a symbol of a great era in the history of the university. The rig was dismantled in January of 1940. On February 5th, it reached Austin by rail. The decision was not reached at once as to the site at which it was to be erected. It was therefore placed in storage. 18 years passed. The Board of Regents then approved a plan advanced by its chairman, Leroy Jeffers, for the erection of this historic rig, which had been brought to Austin under the auspices of the Texas State Historical Association. It was erected and prepared for dedication. The official dedication was made on Thursday, November 27, 1958, at the pregame exercises of the Thanksgiving football game between the University of Texas and Texas Agricultural and Mechanical College. Both institutions receive revenue from the exploitation of this tremendous resource. The rig stands as a reminder of a great event in the history of the university. It serves also as a reminder of the fact that there may be yet greater things to come.